third hour first up here on TSN 1050s, live streaming TSN1050.ca and the iHeartRadio Canada app. Karolnik Kolyakova with you. You hear some Harry Styles, Watermelon Sugar, song that I'm certain was played at Scotiabank Arena last night. Harry Styles doing two nights down here in Toronto, and there was a report yesterday, and I was reading in the Toronto Star that fans were trying to camp out overnight to get as close to the front of the stage as humanly possible. So you had fans, Coco, like, let's say you get into the arena at like 5 o'clock. Let's say this would be yesterday. Lining up at 5 o'clock the day prior, like camping out. It's insane. And I get you could love Harry and his eccentric outfits and his music and yada, yada, yada. But you're really going to spend a night like sitting outside of Scotiabank Arena in a lawn chair to get as close to the stage as possible? Seems absurd to me. In fact,
oh yeah,
Scotiabank Arena was clearing people out, which sucks for them. They spent a lot of time. They're like, yeah, you can't do this. Like, you got to line up at a certain time in a certain place. Right. You can't be spending overnight, nor should they be allowed to. I mean, this doesn't make any sense.
Okay, so here's my beef when it comes to concerts. And you know me, I'm not a concerts guy. Like, you've been to probably more concerts than I. I've been to three concerts in my life, and they're all U2 concerts.
Yeah, I've been to a lot more than three. But yes, please continue.
What's the obsession of sitting close to the stage, as close as you possibly can? At the end of the day, you're in a venue enjoying the music, right?
Yes, but I mean, being closer is awesome. I don't know.
Okay, but
why would you want to be closer to the stage?
What's the advantage of being closer to the stage? You can't touch the person.
Well, you're close. You're maybe some beads of sweat of Harry
okay,
Styles.
Okay, but you can get the same view of closeness from the Jumbotron.
Well, yeah, sure. But I mean, you could also, I mean, yeah, okay, yeah. You could look at a Jumbotron and watch the concert, or you could watch it with your two eyes right up front.
But
Harry Styles,
what are you watching? You're there listening to his music. So what are you watching?
Well, a concert is a more, you know, all-encompassing experience than just listening. It's a
I get it, but okay.
Well,
so what are you watching being closer to the stage than me being in a seat that's 100 meters away? What
you're seeing the interactions with the band and with the different.
I would rather watch that on the Jumbotron because you're getting a closer look of it. I mean, they're showing the same stuff that you'd be seeing closer to the stage.
Like your daughter must be a Harry Styles fan. No, I feel like everybody of a certain age loves Harry and not a fan.
I don't know.
Aware?
I didn't even know who Harry Styles was until you just played his music.
Oh, okay. Well, Harry Styles, the dude from previously from One Direction, he's become one of the biggest music stars on the planet. I would probably argue it's got to be top five right now in the world. I mean, Drake and Taylor
fair.
Swift.
That's fair. Yeah, I know his
Justin
music.
Bieber.
I know the music.
Yeah, and he's got an album that's a massive, massive hit, and dude is just crushing it.
Like, I went to U2 concerts, and to me it wasn't like, oh, I've got to sit as close to the stage as possible. No, I sat comfortably. So when I went to the one at Scotiabank Arena, I sat in a box. It was amazing.
Oh, must be nice.
You're there, you're enjoying the music, and you're watching Bono on the Jumbotron. And I went to a concert in Busch Stadium, and I sat in the outfield seats. It was amazing. Absolutely amazing. You're there enjoying the music. You're not there. To me, like, when you're going to a concert, you're not there saying, oh, I got to sit as close as possible because I want to be as close. Like, you can't touch the person anyway, so what does it matter being close?
I would like to be as close as possible because, again, for all the reasons I outlined earlier, I mean, you're closer to the music and you are seeing the interactions with the band. And you're seeing the artist, Harry Styles or whoever it is, you too, as close as possible. And that's an allure for me. It's an allure for a lot of people. So you're just more chill. You just want to sit and relax and not be kind of crushed with the mob of people in the pit. Probably doesn't help either, but
so,
I don't know.
You just mentioned that. Zach just texted in. He said, closer is a lot more intimate. You'll be closer to everyone dancing or moshing. First of all, I don't ever want to be in a mosh pit.
Definitely not.
And you have a chance. And you have a chance of the artist coming up and slapping your hand.
Yes.
I mean, if that's what it takes for you to enjoy your moment at a concert, taking the risk of the artist coming up and clapping your hands because that's something that's going to live with you for your lifetime. I mean, sure, if that's what gets you going, great. But to me, if you're going to a concert, you're going to enjoy the music of the person you're going to see. So you can enjoy that in any place in the venue.
Let me tell you, Coco, when I went to see Taylor Swift with 20 fingers, I got a high five from Taylor about 5 years ago. I've not washed my hands since. So you see it? You see it?
Yeah.
Unwashed.
I see
since
it. Taylor the Taylor imprint.
All those years ago. So, I don't know. Text us 10-50-50. And if you,
wow. Kara Wagler just tweeted at me. My take on sitting close at concerts is the worst take I've ever heard.
Oh, interesting. And that's... Kara, you haven't been listening to the show long enough because Carlos had a lot worse takes than that. I can tell you that.
I don't understand what's worse about it. To me, I don't have the obsession of being close to somebody. Being close to somebody is being backstage because you have a better chance of interacting with them than you are on the concert floor.
Okay,
I'm at a venue. I'm enjoying the music. I'm dancing to the music. I'm having a good time with the people that I'm there with.
I could type in a lot of concerts in my life. Being close is a lot better than being far. That's just how it works. And you've been to 3 concerts. Maybe you don't have the...
I said I'm not a concert guy. I already said that. I don't understand the obsession of the rush. Sleeping overnight so you get closer to the stage.
Sleeping overnight, that's a lot. That's a lot. But whatever it takes to get as close to Harry as possible, and that's what people were trying to do, and I don't know if they were ultimately successful at Scotiabank Arena, seemingly... didn't really allow them to stay overnight, and I don't know if there's some kind of legal issue or whatever, but I mean, you know, I'm sure if you were in the pit or in the close stage area to see Harry Styles, you had a good time last night, because that dude crushes it night after night. And our intern Josh sending an email regarding Harry and says he has 15 shows in New York City at Madison Square Garden. 15 shows? This guy's doing a residency at MSG. How's that even possible? The 20th, yeah, he's doing like almost every single night from August 20th to September 15th. That's a wild one. Good for Harry. Man, they must be making so much money. So anyways, that's, now it looks like 20 Fingers has a thought on this. He writes, it's the same thing as a sporting event. Would you rather sit close or sit far away and watch the screen? I think it's a very fair point. Your response?
Okay, am I going to a sporting event to watch an NHL game, or am I going to a sporting event to watch an NBA game? Because it's totally different. If I'm going to a sporting event to watch an NBA game, yes, it's 100%. There's value sitting courtside. But there's not value sitting closer to the glass in hockey.
Well, would you rather sit in the nosebleeds at Scotiabank Arena or sit in the
lower bowl? I actually have a better view of the ice. I enjoy watching the game up in the press box.
So why the lower bowl seats more expensive than the upper bowl?
I don't get it. I don't know.
I can tell you because you're closer. But
your view at a hockey rink is different.
It is
different. The closer you sit to the glass, the less view you have of the whole ice.
Definitely. That's true.
Okay, so that's what I'm saying. The experience is different. If you're talking about going to an NBA game and I'm sitting courtside, there's nothing that compares to it. Nothing. At a football game, is it more advantageous to sit closer to the field? I don't think so.
I think so. I mean, you're the only person
you sit closer to the
further
if,
away.
If you sit this. Closer to the field, you have to look over everybody that's standing on the sidelines. What view of the game are you watching?
Well, I mean, you're talking about sitting at the front row. I mean, that's not necessarily what I'm referring to, but like in the lower bowl of an arena, of a stadium, like you're talking about sitting in the first row, and which is not, you know, plausible for most people. But yes, I understand your thought process. I don't agree with it, but we can agree to disagree on this subject.
That's fair. It's my opinion versus your opinion.
It's my opinion and Kara Wagland's opinion against your opinion.
Look, you guys are concert people. You go to concerts. I'm not a concert person. To me, when I go to a concert, I don't need to be sitting as close as possible. I'm there to enjoy the show. I'm there to enjoy the music. I don't need to take my chance of sitting close to the stage hoping that I touch the hand of the artist.
That's true. See?
If I go to a hockey game, I'll tell you right now, the best view for me is the press box view because I get to see the whole ice.
And you get to sit with Jonas Siegel. That's the real draw.
That's fair.
Jonas Siegel, fair. James Myrtle, and you know the whole squad and Leafs media brass. But, I mean, I will say, if you go to a Jays game these days, and last night was Dollar Dog Night, and, you know, I see pictures on Instagram, videos on Instagram. And Twitter.
Wait a minute. People just Dollar Dog Night?
Crushing hot dogs for a dollar. Like small little doggers, but...
Joey Chestnut style.
Yeah, well, pretty much. And I don't know what the number is. Like, you know, if you eat like a lot of those dollar hot dogs, because they're smaller, you're not talking about, like, you know, the... Bremner Street hot dog vendor where, like, you know, these are full dogs. You're talking about, like, probably miniature dogs, smaller dogs, but still, you crush five or six of those, you feel probably quite sick, maybe a little nauseous, and or maybe you're just watching the product on the field these days with the Toronto Blue Jays. I don't know. But, I mean, it's a difficult thing to watch these days if you are a fan of the Toronto Blue Jays, and I'm not sure it's going to get any easier this afternoon. It's the Jays and the O's. Ross Stripling makes his return from the injured list, and I'm not sure what we can expect from him. It could be, you know, it's a little dicey. Did look good in his rehab start, so some optimism heading into the game this afternoon. We'll break it all down with Ben McDonald, former major leaguer, now an analyst with the Orioles. He joins us next. Carlo's take on concert going has generated a bunch of thoughts on our text line, 10-50-50. I don't really know if people agree with me or just disagree with you, but there's been a lot of people discussing the idea of the intimacy of being up close at a concert versus being all the way back. You're closer to the performers, and you missed the previous segment. We were discussing the Harry Styles concert. Now people were camping out to get as close to the stage as possible. Carlo, you're just like, I have no interest in being close to the stage.
No.
In the building.
I don't understand the obsession of people lining up because they want to get closer to the stage. I don't get it. Like, that's just my opinion. I'm not a concert guy. I don't understand it. To me, I've been to three concerts. Like I said, when I go to a concert, I'm there to enjoy the music, and I don't care where I sit.
Let's bring in Ben McDonald, a man who I'm sure has been to many concerts, a professional athlete, played baseball for a long time with Baltimore Orioles, amongst other teams, now a Baltimore Orioles analyst. So, Ben, let me ask you right off the top, before we get to the J's and O's, when you go to a concert, do you care if you're sitting close? You cool with being back? What do you prefer?
Well, I normally go to a concert with my wife, and my wife likes to be close. And I'm going to tell you a quick story. I came home a couple years ago, and she was jumping up there. She goes, I won. I said, what, we won the lottery? What? What'd you win? She goes, I won tickets. I won tickets to go see Garth Brooks, and I'm sitting on the first row. I was like, baby, that's awesome. I said, that's great. I said, well, did you do it over radio, a radio channel? What? She goes, no, I won the bid. I said, baby, you didn't win anything. You just paid the most money for the ticket. So my wife has to sit up front.
Nice.
She thought she won, but she didn't win. She just paid the most money for the ticket. So she got
won the
ticket.
Yeah.
yeah, she won the bid. That's what she told me. But, no, you know, I don't go to many concerts. My wife does, and I do go with her occasionally. But she likes to be up close. Like I don't know. She likes to see what kind of shoes they have on, and how much jewelry they have on, and what the shirt looks like, or whatever. So yeah, I guess I'd rather be up close and just being in the venue itself. If you like the music, it's really cool. And if you're just in the venue itself, you know, it's a pretty cool place to be.
Yeah, that's the way I look at it, man. You go to a concert, you're there to enjoy the music. You're there to enjoy the show. It doesn't matter where you sit, right? Unless you're there,
That's right.
Like unless you're there and they bring you on stage, like that's a different story. But like, what are the chances of that happening?
Very slim. But if you're like my wife, she may run on stage. You know, they got to have security around the stage. You know,
right. So let's dive into baseball here. Obviously, the Baltimore Orioles are a feel good story in the major leagues. Is this what you expected at this time of the year for the Baltimore Orioles? Because clearly it's caught everybody by surprise.
Not even close. I mean, you know, there was no reason to think, you know, now we all thought the Orioles would be better this year because you guys know, like I do, it's been tough to watch Oriole baseball the last 3 or 4 years because they have just gotten beat on pretty bad, you know, over 100 losses. The only thing saved them was the COVID year in 2020 of not losing 100 games, and it's been a rebuild since about the middle part of 2018, and we knew they'd be better this year. We thought they'd be better, but I don't think anybody thought that they would be in the position that they're in right now. So it's been a surprise. It's been a very fun surprise. I think this is a young core group that quite honestly is just tired of getting beat on, and they're hungry, and they want to make a difference. And it's all about the bullpen for the Orioles. The bullpen has turned into the third best bullpen in all of baseball. It's a bunch of guys that truthfully were given up on at some point in time in their careers, and they've landed here in Baltimore, and the coaches have done a good job coaching them up, and they're having career years, and that's kind of where it's at. And there's some exciting young players like Jorge Mateo at shortstop, who's finally getting an opportunity at the big league level for the first time. And, you know, he's a star in the making, I think. You know, he's just getting big league at bats, and there's Mullins and Mountcastle and Hayes, and just a young nucleus. Rutschman came up, and he's made a giant difference. So it's fun to watch. I'm happy for the Orioles. It's like you said, it's really good for baseball because, you know, we were talking to Dennis Eckersley in Boston the other day, and he came in the booth, and, you know, the Hall of Famer, and he's like, man, things have changed. He said, you know, we used to pencil the Orioles in and say, okay, we're going to play the Orioles 19 times this year. That's probably 15 wins for us right there, you know. And he said, it's just different now. He said, dude, we look at y'all's team now and we go, man, I don't know if we want to play that team or not. They're kind of young and dangerous and exciting in some ways. So, you know, it's been a big turnaround. It's been fun for us. Can it continue? Who knows? I mean, everybody's been counting this team out pretty much since they kind of got this thing about 2 months ago, and they've been counting them out, and yet they still find a ways to be relevant every day in each standing. So.
Ben McDonald is our guest, a longtime major league pitcher, now a Baltimore Orioles analyst. And you've been watching the Jays up close for the last couple of days and the last couple of weeks. I think there's 8 or 9 games left between the Jays and the Orioles the rest of the way. What are you seeing from the Jays of late, Ben? Because it has not been going well for Toronto against Baltimore, now 2-6 against the O's this year.
Yeah, well, I saw the starters' ERA, you know, before last night. I think the starters in the last 8 or 9 games has pitched an ERA above 7. So it always begins there. You know, there's nothing wrong with this offense. You know, when you get Springer back in this offense, he's a difference maker at the top. Now, it's disappointing that he may not be able to play the field from where he is because of his elbow issues. So that hurts you from a defensive standpoint. But he makes a difference in the offense for sure, you know. And then you start going around and you're looking, and this team's going to score runs. I mean, it's a top-5 offense in all of Major League Baseball for runs per game. So I'm not worried about the Blue Jays' offense at all. If there's a question mark, there's a question mark with the pitching from what I've seen. Because I saw going into last night's game, you know, the starters had the 8th-best ERA in the American League, and the bullpen was the 9th-best ERA in the American League. So I think that's where some of the concerns are. If the Jays can kind of shore up their pitching a little bit and those guys get going, and I know it's been a little bit of a disappointment with some of the guys. Kikuchi's not performed, you know, like you guys thought he would, and a couple of other guys. Guys have been pretty good, and obviously Manoah, you know, got hit a little bit last night, but he's been a superstar this year. He's been an all-star, you know. And so I think if your starting pitching can get going, be a little bit more consistent, the Blue Jays are there. But I love the offense, man. I tell you what, when you talk about young players and guys that can do it a little bit, I mean, Guerrero is always fun to watch, Gurriel. Kirk's had a nice year. Chapman's doing his thing. The offense is going to score runs. So I think it's all about the Blue Jays pitching, to be honest.
Well, considering everything you said about the Blue Jays, you would think that they were the team that should be comfortably in a playoff spot right now. But it's teams like the Orioles that have made it difficult, life difficult for them. And help me understand the mindset of the Orioles, because clearly they had a really good start to the season. And at the trade deadline, you would think that there'd be a push to make this team better and give themselves a real chance. But they go the opposite way. They trade one of their best hitters. They trade their closer in the game. And that could suck the wind out of a team and suck the life out of a team. But instead, it has motivated this team to play even better baseball. How is this happening?
That's a great question. You know, and I'll take you back further than that. I'll take you back to spring training right before the season began. We trade away our 2 best relievers right out of the chute. I think it was Cole Sulcer and Tanner Scott. We traded, and those were our 2 proven arms coming back in the bullpen. We trade those guys away right away, and everybody's going, oh, my gosh, we just traded our best 2 bullpen arms. The season hasn't even begun. We're going to lose 120 games this year, you know, and we rock along, and we're playing well. And then our ace pitcher, John Means, who threw the no-hitter last year, he's our ace of our staff. He blows out his elbow early in the year, and everybody's like, oh, my gosh, it's really over with now, right? And the Orioles keep rocking along, overachieving, winning ball games. Tyler Wells emerged as the best starter for the Orioles, and he went like 18 consecutive starts and 3 earned runs or less. And all of a sudden, about a month or so ago, he blows out in the oblique. And the people say, oh, it was a heck of a run, man. It was a hell of a run, but it's over for the Orioles now. They might not win 5 games the rest of the year. Well, they keep on winning. And as you mentioned, you get to the trade deadline, and you trade Mancini away, and you trade your all-star closer away, and there we go again. You know, the pundits out there are going, okay, that was fun. We enjoyed that, and we got a little taste of what it could be like years in the future. But it's over now, right? It's over, and yet this team just keeps on winning somehow. And I can't explain it. I think we have 26 come-from-behind victories this year. It's just, I explain it like this. They don't have any quit in them. There is no quit in this team at all. I've seen them come back time and time again. And I don't mean this in a bad way, but I do a lot of college baseball, too, and do the College World Series and all that. But it almost reminds me of a college team. And I'm not saying it in a bad way, but the enthusiasm and the just the belief that they can every time. And you talk to the players on this Orioles team, and they'll tell you, in years past, we'd come to the ballpark, and maybe if John Means was on the mound, we felt like we had a chance to win. Plus, past that, we didn't really feel like we had a chance to win. You talk to them now, and they come to the ballpark every day, and they go, we got a real chance to win. We think we can win today. And that's what's different about this team versus last year. It's a team that's grown up a little bit with a young nucleus, but it's also a team that's hungry and a team that I really feel like is tired of being embarrassed like they have been embarrassed the last 4 years in Major League Baseball. So they're starting to punch back, if that makes any sense. They've been punched on for a while, now they're starting to punch back. And so, you know, it's just one of those years, and you guys know this, everybody in that bullpen has had a career year. I can go down that bullpen. Felix Bautista, who I call the Mountain, 6'8", 280 pounds, who closed the game last night, he began the year last year in A-ball. Look where he is now, and look what he's doing. C&L Perez was given up on. The Orioles signed him. Joey Crable given up on. The Orioles signed him. Brian Baker given up on. The Orioles signed him, and they're all having career-type years. That doesn't happen every year, but it's certainly happening this year. So it's been fun to watch. It's baseball. And I know what you said about the Jays, and they should be further, but I'll take you one step further than that. How about the New York Yankees and what they've done as of late? There's only two teams in baseball that have a worse record since the All-Star break. I think that's the Tigers and somebody else in the New York Yankees. And who saw that coming, right? I mean, they were arguably on pace to have the best season in the history of baseball right before the All-Star break, and they're doing what they're doing right now. So baseball is a crazy game, guys. You can't figure it out. But look, don't be down on the Blue Jays. I think they're as good as anybody. I think if their pitching comes around, they're a World Series caliber team. I really believe that. So it's just going to have to shake them to see if the pitching can come around.
Yeah, it's a big if.
It is a big if. But the way baseball works, as Ben, I think, pointed out very well, I mean, we could chat again in September with Ben Carlo, and, you know, the Orioles could have lost 10 in a row, and the Jays could have won 10 in a row, and we're like, wow, the Orioles really fell off like we all expected them to, and the Jays had their, maybe perhaps, peaking at the right time moment in the month of September. It's a funny sport, and you mentioned the Yankees as the prime example, a team that couldn't lose for months, and all of a sudden, they cannot buy a win in spite of their best efforts. Over the years as well. So thank you so much for doing this for us, Ben. Would love to catch up down the road when the Jays play the O's later next month.
Look forward to it, guys. Anytime. Y'all take care.
All right, you too. That's Ben McDonald, fan of concerts and fan of the Baltimore Orioles. Shout out to him.
That's a funny story. I won the bid. That means you paid more.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. That's exactly it. So we'll have to revisit the concert convo because, man, the texts are pouring in, 10-50-50. A lot of people upset with your stance on where you sit at concerts. Let me tell you, people, Carlo has been to 3 concerts, so he would be
It's
a
not
bad
a
judge.
Stance, A.K. It's my opinion.
You'd be a bad judge on this situation. Like, a lack of experience.
That's my opinion. My opinion is I don't understand the obsession for people to line up hours before doors are supposed to open to get a closer seat to the stage. When
Generally speaking, understanding things is about experiences, and learning about them is about experiencing them. So the fact that you haven't had that experience, you've only been to 3 concerts, I mean, not really the best person to opine on where one should sit at a concert. That would be my
personal not allowed to decision. Have an opinion? Holy
Well, God. You are, but I mean, it's not really an informed one if you don't actually have the experience to correlate to the situation.
My experience with my 3 experiences is that I'm in a venue listening to the same music everybody else is. And I'm doing it in a comfortable spot. I don't need to be as close to the stage as possible because what I believe people are seeing on the floor is the same thing that I'm watching on the Jumbotrons in these places.
That is true.
That's just me.
That is true, but I mean, as I said before, it's an experience. It's more than just listening to the music. The visual is a very big part of a concert as well, and watching on the Jumbotron is not the same as watching it with your own 2 eyes up close. In my opinion, And generally speaking, the people on the text line agree with me. I mean, I don't know if you've been to many golf events beyond the RBC Canadian Open this past, was it even June? But, I mean, you got to be up close and see the boys smashing drives, and that's what we'll see at the BMW Championship this week. And Rex Hoggard from the Golf Channel, he's going to join us in 15 minutes. We'll talk about that, and we'll also talk about the lawsuit launched by Patrick Reed against the Golf Channel, his employer, and Brandel Chambly, his colleague. So looking forward to getting into that as well in about 15 minutes' time. As First Up continues, it's Wednesday. You're listening to TSN 1050. Lots of Harry Styles this morning in honor of his concerts at Scotiabank Arena the last couple of nights. Back here on First Up, Karolnik and Koliakovo. And there is some, I guess, breaking news, I would qualify it as, Coco, and maybe more breaking reporting, that it sounds like there is an active negotiation regarding a settlement between Deshaun Watson and the NFL. And we know that Sue L. Robinson, the initial decision maker when it came to Deshaun Watson's suspension, she gave him a 6-game suspension. The NFL decided to appeal that suspension. And then Roger Goodell designated a dude in New Jersey, a lawyer, what's his name, Peter Harvey is his name?
Yeah.
To handle the appeal. And it sounds like this Peter Harvey character is encouraging Watson and the NFL to come to a resolution without him rendering a decision. So apparently there is a decision, this is according to Mary Kay Cabot out of Cleveland, that a deal could be reached soon that gets him on the field this season. And we know the NFL reportedly wanted Watson to miss the entire year and maybe 10 games, 12 games, 14 games, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if at some point today we found out the final resolution on this Watson situation and
is not a full season.
And
I'm gonna take a guess here. I'm gonna guess that they suspend him 10 games.
Well, the reason 12 has always been the number is because
it's double of six.
The 12th game of the season is in Houston against the Texans. And again, according to reports, they don't want him back in Houston playing a game in Houston. That's, again, maybe that's a stretch, but that's, I mean, it's a conspiracy.
But why?
Theory,
he didn't leave with any animosity from that organization.
Well, that's where all these alleged incidents happen. That's what it's about. So I don't even know if it's alleged.
Somewhere, somehow, down the road, it's going to happen that he goes back to Houston.
For sure, but maybe not this year. So that's what the NFL, at least reportedly, is trying to avoid with Watson. So that's why I think 12 is the number, but it's also the financial component, too, because Watson's contract is structured in a way to basically avoid the first year a lot of payments, and there's a reason. Deshaun Watson's got a good agent, someone who knew what was going to happen likely with a suspension, and most of the money, almost all the money, is paid out in the second, third, fourth, and fifth years of his contract. So this year he's not making a lot of money. So my guess, based on everything that I've tried to gather here, is maybe a 10. I think it's going to be 12-game suspension and a fine of $10 million or $5 million or whatever it is. And maybe that satisfies the NFL, and maybe that satisfies Deshaun Watson, because I don't know, he's got $230 million guaranteed coming to him. So, you know, $10 million, what's that to Deshaun Watson? And if he just wants to get back on the field as soon as possible, then maybe that's a doable compromise between the two sides. But a very curious case for the NFL, who are resolute, and we need him to miss the season. Indefinite, that's what we want. And, I mean, based on everything that's been reported, that guy is a total...
Well, the only reason why I said 10 games is because we had Mark Dominic on earlier in the week, and he said he predicts 8 to 10 games. So,
yeah,
I went with the 10 games.
Well, I mean, Mark also thought that you know, the 6 games would hold up and the appeal process wouldn't happen.
No, he didn't think that. That's what he hoped would happen. He said, I just hope that they accept this and we can just finally move on from this. Because if you go to appeal process, then what was the point in the CBA negotiations hiring a third party?
That's it.
Right.
So I mean, this doesn't look like it's going to get to the appeal process. And it sounds like the Peter Harvey designee from Roger Goodell is encouraging them to come to some kind of compromise and figure something out. But I mean, this is just a cloud hanging over the NFL season, and I mean, it's not something that can just be glossed over. I mean, what Deshaun Watson is alleged to have done is a despicable, heinous thing. And not only one thing, 25 things, reportedly. So we'll see how this plays out, and we will report on that as news breaks. But the PGA Tour situation with LIV Golf continues to be a central storyline, with the BMW Championship taking place this week, the second leg of the FedEx Cup playoffs. We did see Will Zalatoris win last week in the first, like, what a, we didn't even talk about that finish, man. I mean,
it's incredible.
Zalatoris versus Straka. And I was,
how
at
was
Josh
he even thinking
wedding.
About hitting that ball?
Well,
off,
I mean,
off the
exactly.
green there.
And I don't know if you saw the some guy try to reenact that shot.
Yes.
But it just like chunk right into the
yeah,
water.
It hit the lip. It hit the lip yeah. and went right back into the water, which is what you knew it was going to do.
Yeah. So, I mean, we'll see how Zalatoris follows this up this week. But yeah, him, his first PGA Tour win, and him yelling, ah, yeah, basically all at all his critics who said he couldn't putt. He rolled in some
Steph
big
Curry.
Putts.
He threw
yeah,
a Steph
exactly,
Curry line.
Exactly. So that.
What
was
do you got to say too. About that now?
Yeah, it was a beautiful thing. It was a beautiful thing. And everyone's a Will Zalatoris fan. I mean, the guy's come so close so many times, especially in major championships. And for him to get it done in the FedEx Cup playoffs was really cool to see. And we'll get into that. So that is one big story. Also, Patrick Reed's lawsuit against Brandel Chamblee, right. Golf Channel analyst, for $750 million, which if he somehow wins, it actually could forever, and this might sound a little bit hyperbolic.
There's no chance, Patrick.
If he
Reed
actually wins, it changes the entire scope of sports media because yes. you can't say anything bad about anybody.
No
anymore.
Kidding.
It's just like, oh, okay, that's a major yeah. problem. So I'd be very curious to
next
know.
Thing you know, Lonzo Ball is going to be throwing me a lawsuit.
Oh, yeah. That's right. You're like, get served by Lonzo Ball. You're like, what? So you, Carlos said I suck, so I'm suing him for $500 million.
He sucks.
You're like, oh, okay, yeah. Well, there, that's really.
You
that's
are
really
a hater.
Yeah, yeah. LeVar,
you
LeVar
suck
and
too,
Lonzo,
LeVar.
Co-defendants or co-whatever on the lawsuit heading your
stay
way.
Stay in your lane.
Yeah, thank you very much, LeVar. So that's something that'll be interesting, no doubt. And the Tiger Woods-led meeting yesterday. Between the top 20 players on the world. Like, what happened in that meeting? I'd be very curious. And Rex Hoggard from the Golf Channel is going to let us know what he's heard on that subject when he joins us in a couple of minutes. And let me just bring this up here. TSN 1050 is delivering backpacks filled with school supplies and supporting local families during these difficult times. It's all part of the Back to School Backpacks event happening August 24th. And this year's event is presented by... excuse me, Vanilla Prepaid. I'm getting choked up here. Available for purchase at Petro-Canada, together in partnership with the Children's Breakfast Clubs. 1,010 young students will receive the tools they need to succeed before the school bell rings in September. For all the details, head to tsn1050.ca. Tough read for yours truly, but a very valuable initiative. Rex Hoggard from the Golf Channel is joining us on the other side. First Up continues. It's TSN Radio. So it's the second leg of the FedEx Cup playoffs in the PGA Tour. Will Zalatoris winning last week. Incredible showdown with Sepp Straka. Talk about the anxiety watching Will Zalatoris, a guy who I think 99.9% of people were cheering for over Sepp
oh,
Straka.
Yeah.
Like, I almost felt bad for Sepp. The people in attendance, in the crowd, on TV, on social media, everyone was like, please, not Sepp Straka. Like, let Will Zalatoris pick up a win. And fortunately for the crowd down there, I mean, Zalatoris did win. And I guess everybody who bet on him as well, there's a lot of that.
Well, I think Will Zalatoris is a fan favorite because of the familiarity around him. I mean, there's people that link him to the movie Happy Gilmore, right? And so there's a fun story there because he looks like the caddy from Happy Gilmore
he
in
does,
that movie. And,
does.
You know, he uses social media to sort of rally around that. He quote tweets Adam Sandler. He quote tweets Shooter McGavin. Like, he's buying into this whole story and narrative that he's the guy from the movie. And I think people who love that movie love to cheer for Will Zalatoris.
Well, there's that. And the fact that he's been an awesome golfer on the PGA
He's been
Tour.
The best golfer. The best money-making golfer on the PGA Tour this year.
Yeah, him and Scottie Scheffler right there, right? And Zalatoris finished second at, what, four consecutive majors.
Right.
The guy's been right there. So it's been a great story to see him have so much success and finally win on tour after being so close so many times. And I would assume that Will Zalatoris was part of that meeting yesterday, led by Tiger Woods, where a number of the top players in the PGA Tour discussing the future of the tour, where to go from here with PGA versus the LIV. Do we have Rex on the line, guys? No?
No.
Okay, so we'll go to Rex in just a second. But, I mean, that meeting, if Tiger's flying in from Florida and making his thoughts known, there's a lot of stuff happening behind the scenes that I don't think we know about yet. And we know Cameron Smith's leaving. He's a second-ranked player in the world, the reigning Open champion, guy who pulled out of the BMW because he had hip soreness. Like, he's like, yeah.
So I heard a theory about that.
Well, he wanted to avoid the meeting.
No, I heard an even better theory about that. I think this meeting has definitely raised some eyebrows for the PGA Tour because they're getting hints that there's more guys leaving. And I heard it was Riggs from Barstool. He mentioned this yesterday.
Ooh,
and he brought up a perfect point. He suggests that the PGA Tour basically said, all right, Cam, we know you're leaving. We're not going to give you a chance to play in the FedEx. So we're telling you you're not playing in the BMW. And maybe they orchestrated this story with his agent and said, either we're going to embarrass him by telling him he's not playing in it, or you're going to come up with a story. Now, look, this is a theory, but it makes sense.
How does that make any sense? What? No, it doesn't. Why would Cam Smith accept that?
To eliminate the embarrassment of the PGA kicking him out.
PGA can't kick him out. He hasn't joined LIV yet. He hasn't played in an event yet.
Well, look, again, I don't know if there's
any truth
to
this. That
doesn't
make any sense. That is a bad take from Riggs, and he rarely makes bad takes. That's just like the PGA can't be like,
hip injury? Hip discomfort? Come on.
The conspiracy theory that was going around was that Cam Smith had this hip discomfort to avoid this meeting. That is a lot more plausible. I wouldn't want to be sitting in that meeting if I was Cam Smith, where basically everyone's shooting daggers at you, whether it's McIlroy or Spieth or Scheffler or Tiger. That's something I would like to avoid if I was Cam Smith. And for him, a guy who, you know, I mean, he's getting $100 million from LIV in a couple weeks, whatever it is, when this whole saga is over in the FedEx Cup playoffs. But I think Cam Smith's going to be playing next week in the third leg. Like, why would he skip that? Doesn't
Do we
sense.
Know that?
He gets a chance to win, was it, $20 million in the FedEx Cup?
Yeah.
Why would he skip that? Doesn't make any sense.
I'm with you, which is part of the reason why I've defended him in the sense of people are saying, well, he's gone, he's leaving. I'm like, well, yeah, he probably is, but why would he leave now if he's got a chance
well,
to win 20?
Well, he's not leaving now.
If he's got a chance to win $20 million before he leaves.
It's not that uncommon to skip a leg of the FedEx Cup playoffs. It's happened before. It'll happen again. Maybe we're just reading too much into it as far as what's actually going on with Cam Smith, but I am almost certain that unless he actually has a real injury, he's going to be playing next week because he wants to win the FedEx Cup and win $20 million. He was right there last week until that two-stroke penalty kind of screwed him over.
There's the other theory, too. Do you think, after thinking about it and after what it did to him and his potential result on Sunday, do you think he sat back and said, I can't believe they did this to me. You know what? I'm just not going to play in the BMW and I'm going to make up an excuse as to why I'm not going to play.
Could be. I guess we'll never know. And it's a hard
hip
one.
Hip discomfort?
To
come on, man. I wake up every day with hip discomfort and I still grind it out.
Yeah. You grind what out? Riding your cart, playing 18 holes?
That's right.
Yeah, that's true. It's a very similar situation. So it does not look like we are going to get we're not going to get Rex, but that's a shame. We'll ask Dave Feshchuk because I know he's dialed into the golf world as well. And this whole Patrick Reed lawsuit, I'm just trying to understand the logic behind him launching a $750 million defamation suit against Brandel Chamblee in the Golf Channel. Maybe they turned off the Golf Channel phone. That's why Rex couldn't answer. Because they're preparing to fight this litigation from Patrick Reed. But it is a shocking turn of events from a player suing a media member for being too critical and calling him a cheater and saying that he has bad practices. And Patrick Reed alleges that it's because of Brandel Chamblee in the Golf Channel that fans heckle him and call him a cheater to his face. This is a real thing that's happening.
But it's Patrick Reed.
$750 million lawsuit
How can you take anything this guy says or does seriously?
That's a terrifying prospect for sports radio and sports television.
But here's the thing. I can understand if the lawsuit had, you know, a legitimate complaint. There is video evidence of this guy cheating multiple times on the golf course. So what are you supposed to do? Not address it? Not talk about it? I mean, come on. Like, dude.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. You're right. And he cheated. He's cheated multiple times on the PGA Tour. So what is what is Brandon Chambly? Listen, is maybe sometimes the criticisms of Patrick Reed a little bit harsh to outwardly call him, he's a cheater. He's going to fluff his lie in the rough. He's going to ground his club in the bunker. Is that a little bit harsh? Maybe. You can make that argument. But is that worthy of a $750 million lawsuit? I would probably say no.
So what? Is now Bryson DeChambeau going to sue whoever started the chant of calling him Brooksy? Like, is this what we're getting into?
That is.
This is part of being a professional athlete, man. You're playing on a stage in front of fans. You can't control what fans say. You hope it's nothing that crosses the line. But come on, man. You're telling me this stuff crosses the line with you? The fact that he's actually making it a big story makes it worse because now it's just going to egg people on more and more to call him that because they know it bothers them.
What was the worst chirp you ever heard as a pro athlete? What was the meanest thing anyone ever said?
Soft. People, when people call me soft, I took offense to that. Because I was the furthest thing from being soft. I put a lot of pride in my art, in my craft. And I worked my ass off. So yeah, that's one thing that stung when people would call me soft. Now, I never took it to heart. I never let it bother
me. You're giving me some ammunition here. So now I know where this...
I'll tell you right now, there is nothing anybody can say to me that would make me lose sleep. I tell you right
now. No, that's true. I will say that's something you're really good about because, you know, sometimes we have arguments and then I just hurl insults at you and you never take them personally.
Never. So, I don't take any.
I always do. And then I just come back at you way harder and you're like, okay. Yeah.
Brush it off, buddy.
I haven't called you soft because you are not soft, although you only ride carts on the golf course. You refuse to walk. So that is pretty soft. That is pretty
soft. It's not, though. I have a legitimate excuse.
You have hip discomfort, so.
Yeah, I have back discomfort, a lot of back discomfort.
Yeah, me too. Oh, very. Yes. A lot of. I do. You know what it is? I was sitting in the studio yesterday, overdrive. I'm kind of like hunched over the microphone, and my lower back is just.
Dude, you got
to
stop that thing that you do with the microphone, especially when you're on live TV.
So
like you're constantly moving. You're constantly fidgeting.
I turn
like,
it on and off, and that's a radio thing.
Yeah, but you're on the air. Your mic should be on. You're not going to say or do
more
anything with your mic's on when you're on live TV.
I blame the grappler. He didn't give me good guidance.
You're too fidgety. Like, just sit there,
fidgety.
Relax, and just say what's on your mind without having to move your hands all the time.
It's true. I just, I needed the grappler to kind of guide me.
It's like you say something,
better.
It's like, I got to turn off my mic. Then you're about to say, I got to turn my mic on.
I hate having my mic on.
You talk on a mic for a living. Get used to
it. You would be surprised how much I turn my mic on and off when we're not in studio. So it's always off during a lot of different things. So,
that's crazy.
That's not that crazy. You know. So anyways, we got Dave Feschuk coming up from the Toronto Star. He's going to join us in about 5 minutes.
Are we getting Kara Wagland to join us? I want to come on and
we got to talk to Kara Wagland. Not a fan of your take on concerts where you'd rather be further back than close up, which is
can we change something? It's not my take. It's my opinion.
That's the same thing.
No, I don't have a take on anything.
An opinion, a synonym of opinion is a take.
Okay, but a take is something you plant your feet on the ground in and you're actually like making a point about something. I'm sharing my opinion on something that I don't understand. It's not a take.
Pretty sure it's the same thing.
No,
but in any
it's
case,
not.
Is a take the same as an opinion? We'll ask wordsmith Dave Feschuk from the Toronto Star. He'll join us next. And James Duthie. Wow. We got JD from Edmonton. And we'll see what type of condition James is. He's a professional.
7 o'clock.
Two hours behind.
He's getting ready for his tea time for sure.
I'll guarantee he's on the first tee. And I don't know. They had it was Mackenzie's birthday last night.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
maybe they went out, sipped on some Bobby Margaritas. James and the crew were out deep into the night partying for Bob Mackenzie. That's what I would do if I was there. That's what Puffy was doing. Is Puffy at the World Juniors? Do we know that? You know, any intel on that?
100% he is.
Well, then Puffy, I mean, that guy won't wake up till 1 o'clock celebrating McKenzie.
Yeah, but he doesn't need to.
Yeah.
He doesn't need to.
So, anyways, we'll get to Dave Fastchuck and James Duthie as the fourth hour first up begins next.